Thanks, Shelley. And it is indeed my pleasure to introduce our speaker today, Inge Thulin, Chairman, President, and CEO of the 3M Company, a company that has over $30 billion in annual sales and over 90,000 employees worldwide. I'll give you a few brief remarks about Inge, and then he'll come up here and share his thoughts and observations about his business experience. Inge is a native of Sweden, and after graduating from the University of Gothenburg in 1978, he had a very, very brief stint as a banker. He decided that wasn't for him. He then joined 3M and has been there ever since. As you noted in his bio that was distributed with a newsletter for this meeting, he has participated in and has been a big fan all his life of ice hockey. What was not noted in the bio is that he's an avid bicycle rider. Matter of fact, he's an active member of 3M's National Bike Challenge team and often takes his bike with him on business trips so that he can train for the bike season. Now, when he's not focused on 3M, his family, sports, or his charitable activities, Inge likes to collect and maintain watches, and he also maintains fluency in a number of languages, and generally, he starts his day about 4 a.m., which helps explain how he does all those other things. So please join me in welcoming our speaker, Inge Thulin.
Thank you, Bob. Thanks so much for behind this. Good afternoon. Well, pleasure to be here. And maybe we turn this off, right? In a way. Can we do that? Why don't you take that? Yeah. There we go. Well, thank you very much for having me here today. It's a pleasure for me to be here. You know, the future is already here when you see those students coming up and talk. And I think it's a important element for all of us to think about. The future is here already, and I'm serious about that relative to some of the thing I will talk about around technologies, because I think that advancement as we move ahead will be very much related to two things in terms of growth in the world. It will be technology conversions, and it will be demographic shift. Those are two things that are, in fact, growing the world. We are often talking about IPI and GDP, but also two metrics that we measure versus. And there's no doubt in my mind that technology conversion and demographic shift is what is driving the future relative to economies in the world. So we have many students here, and I think we can have an interview afterwards and see if we can start with 3M, because this is exactly what we need.
There you go.
Now, what I thought I would do, I would talk a little bit about 3M, and then I will take you around the world based on what I see, what is happening, both financially and geopolitically. Why I start to talk about 3M is it's an icon company, it's a big company, and in my view, something that United States should be very, very proud of a company that is born and raised in not only Minnesota, but in the United States, and today is all over the world with a market cap of almost 100 billion US dollars. And I know there are some former 3Mers here today that have been on our board previously, and we have one board member here today, which is Ed Liddy. But I think the important thing is with the success today that we have in 3M is not only based on what we do. We only stand on the shoulders of those that have done it before us in order to build this enterprise. And I think that's an important thing. And I think it's a good place to invest your money in. So that's why we talk a little bit about what we're all about. And the fact that is not well known is that you are never more than 10 feet from a 3M solution. And I can prove it here and now. And we can take away the post-it notes from the tables. You're still not more than 10 feet away from a 3M scientific solution. We can talk later in Q&A about that, but it's an important thing in order to understand what we are doing. We are a company that is based on technologies. We have 46 technology platforms that are all owned by the enterprise. So they are not owned by a specific division or country. They are open in terms of open in innovation inside the company and outside the company. So it's an important element. We have 105,000 patents. So you think about that. Bob said we have 90,000 people. We have more patents than people. There's one patent plus for everyone. I try still to get one. So I don't know how that will work. But I ask if I can get one. They say, no, they are protected. We have a market cap of only almost 100 billion and a sales of $32 billion. 65% of that sales is outside of the United States. So that's a big portion of it. And that being a big vision, in my view, relative to two things that will drive an enterprise like 3M. One was technology platform. The other was expansion geographically. So you think about BRIC, Brazil, Russia, India, and China, start to be talked about maybe 10 years ago. 3M went to Brazil in 1946. So if you didn't go from Minnesota to Wisconsin, you went to Wisconsin, but you also went to Brazil, which in an expansion, in my view, that was incredible. So we've been many places for a long time. Research and development is the heartbeat of the company. We invest around 6% in research and development. And as maybe many of you know, 15% of the time that people in research and development can spend, they can spend on whatever they like. So we get 15% of the time free in order to work on projects that they think are interesting. And I think that's coming back to what I talk about, technology conversion. That is where you need to be if you will have a company that have good returns to shareholders. Otherwise, you will, over time, become commoditized. And if you're commoditized, you basically try to offer something that already exists in the market. So it's an important element for our business. We have five business groups, and we reached the whole way from electronic and energy to healthcare, to industrial, to safety and graphic, and try to expand with the technology platforms into those businesses. We have a machine of new products, and today the metric we are using is something we call New Product Vitality Index, NPVI. That means that a product that did not exist 5 years ago that are sold today, that percentage is 32%. So if you take 32 billion of sales, can basically say of the product we're selling today, 10 billion did not exist 5 years ago. So that is vitalization that need to happen in a company in order for you to be able to drive margins and return on investment, and also, as you know, drive price. So it's a very important element in terms of our own business model. Now, I think the other thing is brand equity. You build brand equity over time, and 3M as a brand is very strong in terms of the equity. And we talk about that science applied to life. So we are very science-based, and we have 8,000 scientific people in the company, and over 3,000 of them have a PhD. So it's a powerhouse relative to what you can do. And in my mind, there's two things that never should be compromised in 3M, and that is the research and development investment, and is the investment in people's development. So the two things of them are very, very important. And in terms of education, STEM is an important element for us. Very, very important in terms of science, technology, energy, and math. And I think that's coming right into the young people we saw up here today. It's an important element to do that, and do it specifically in addition for women. I think in terms of technology for the future, there's much more potential coming out from women in leadership position as you go ahead. So that's something that we start to drive as well, together with sustainability. So sustainability today is important, but I don't believe personally that a company that are not committed to sustainability the whole way through, maybe we'll not be in business 15 to 25 years from now. And you can look upon that, what all companies try to do. in my view is that many see a threat in it. Before I became CEO, I called to 45 former CEOs or sitting CEOs and asked them two things. Please give me the five things you will do differently if you're becoming CEO again. It was very interesting. It was 45 by 5. That's a lot. And you could look upon it and say, this is maybe something I can do differently. But I also asked them, give me your top 10 list of what is on your mind at this point in time. All of them had sustainability on that list. All of them. Not just number one or number two, but it was on top 10. And I also figured out when I listened to them, it was more like a threat. It's coming versus me. I don't know what to do. And I thought around sustainability, if you're leading 3M, that you can take a proactive approach and provide solution to them that will help them be more competitive. So that's also why we have waved that into our overall technology platform as we go. Now, let me give a couple of comments relative to what I see around the world. And just so you know, me and my wife is here today with me, Helene, that's good. we have traveled the world together and left. We were born and raised in Sweden. We left Sweden in 1991 and since have lived in France, in Belgium, in Russia, United States twice, and I also had a stint in Hong Kong. So we have lived places and I would say operated on the ground in both developed and developing economies. So, and I think at least for us and for me in my role, I have got a good understanding and education relative to the reality. I often say I'm not flying around with a dashboard and tell people what to do. I've in fact worked in those countries. And I think Russia was a very important development for me when I lived there in 95 to 97 because it defined me as a leader and I think it, to a certain degree defined me and my family relative to what we stand for. And it's coming back to business conduct, then we can talk about that later. But let me just take you around the world to those places, and let me start with West Europe. West Europe today, as we know, it talked very much about the slow economy, very difficult to do business, tough labor laws, etc. And they're all correct, but realities around West Europe is the following. 24% of the global GDP is in West Europe. They are very well educated. They are based on technology. And they are very, very productive in what they are doing. So my view on West Europe is we are just on the point now where some restructuring have taken place, but we will see a little bit more and positive growth coming out of West Europe. The issue with West Europe is the labor laws, meaning if you go in and invest in some countries, you cannot come out. So why will you do that? So you need to have flexibility in the labor laws. So certain countries in Europe, specifically in South Europe, is an issue to make investment in assets because as soon as you're in, you can never come out. And it's your responsibility to run a business to have flexibility. That 100 companies in West Europe that are world-class relative to technologies. That is why West Europe is very interesting, and I'm positive relative to West Europe for growth that will come. We go around to Central East Europe, Middle East, Africa. I would say in that part of the world, you know all the geopolitical things going in Middle East, Africa, which I think is a concern from a business perspective, how you structure it. And we ourselves had actually maybe 7 or 8 years ago, we split the two regions. So we had them together. We split them up because we saw opportunities in both. 12 months ago, we collapsed them back again. So it's, I would say, in that part of the world, if you look upon real growth, there's basically three countries that can provide some growth for you. It's Russia, Poland, and Turkey. And you know all the geopolitical things happening for both Russia and Turkey as we speak. Again, you need to make sure, in my view, that you capitalize on the domestic local market there and that you are very careful to put in assets into the country. So we don't do that. We are just waiting, holding up, and we are importing products there at this point in time. Latin America, is a place that has been growing very, very well during, I would say, the last 10 years. They have some ups and downs, but when you look upon the trend, it's very positive. And I think the interesting thing is that it's not driven by only Mexico and Brazil. All the countries there are growing in a very positive way. As we speak, and I think you saw in the news today and yesterday, Brazil, there are some issues. And in my view, Brazil will not come out of current situation for at least 2 years. Because there is a new election coming in 2 years, and after that point they cannot solve it. Actually, it looked like it's becoming worse when you try to protect the former president from corruption by putting him back into the government again. That's a very strange, very strange system, right? So I don't know how you can do that, but you can do it in Brazil. That immediately, immediately that is raising a question mark relative to business conduct and ethics. And you say, okay, I'm not really sure this is the best place to do business. Now, we have been there since 1946. We have a big operation there, and it's all based on the domestic market. But I think it's an issue by definition. Mexico is a country that is growing very well, both domestically, but very much because they're exporting a lot to the United States. So United States doing well, I will comment on that in a second. Mexico is doing well as well. They have a big automotive industry that is exporting to the United States, and Mexico is a good place to be. Now, Asia. Let me talk about Asia in category of China, second biggest economy in the world, still growing 4 to 5%. They think it's growing 6. I don't think so. I think it's growing 4 to 5. But you know the point is, second biggest economy in the world, growing at 4%. I would take it. I would take it any day of the week. And they are not shifting, they are expanding the economy from domestic related or from export related to more domestic. People often talk about that they're shifting the economy. They are not. They are expanding it. Then you have Japan that I think have done better the last couple of years due to really good action from the financial institutions there, and it's a good place to be. High quality, output is good, demographic is not the best. The aging population there is aging very fast. Every day they're aging. Every day. Like Sweden, every day. But the point is, they don't have any immigration policy, right? So they don't have anyone coming in and do the job there. So by definition, Japan will be an issue down the road. And then you have maybe the unspoken growth engine in Asia is Southeast Asia. Southeast Asia is right in the hub of capitalized of all the growth. So look upon Southeast Asia as a supplier to China and to Japan. So they have a huge domestic market with Indonesia, Philippines, Taiwan, Thailand, etc. But they will also capitalize on the growth coming in Japan and in China. So they will provide a lot. So there's a big, big opportunity. And then finally, before we go on Q&A, United States. United States is the biggest economy in the world. This is the place to do business at this time of the history. And it's interesting for me, I led international for 3M from 2004 to 2011, so 8 years. And we expanded and in sales from 10 to 20 billion under 8 years. And growth was outside of United States. United States was type of flattening out. And it was a concern for us. So less growth in United States than in international. Today, 5 years later, it looked different. So you can just go back a couple of years where everyone talked about BRIC and they talk about China. Growth was out there, right? Everyone tried to expand out there. And today, people will be pleased to be here. And we are very pleased to be here. I mean, this is our home arena, and 3M will never lose here by definition. We have all capabilities here, and it's a wonderful place to do business. We're very pleased to be here. And I think the advantage for us is when all this expansion discussion went on, there was many companies that moved manufacturing from United States overseas. We never did that. We build capabilities in those countries. So it was a local strategy. China for China, Russia for Russia, Germany for Germany. And we kept our capabilities here. And now, as the economy shifts, we should be able to capitalize on that. So I think that I hold there. I think it's a talk about business conduct, ethics, right? It's an important thing when you do business. You know, never cut a corner anywhere. Make sure that you have an organization with you that constantly think about that as the first thing, to protect yourself and protect the company. And I think that's very much ingrained in me because I worked and lived in a country as a young man, very young, in Russia, and had opportunities to be sent in there by Harry Hamerly, that is here, by the way, today. He sent me in there in order to teach me, I think, and sent me in for 2 years. And I think it was an education for me in order to prepare myself for bigger jobs in the future, where you think about those type of things, how to do business and how not to do business, and where you have to say no to huge, huge opportunities that you have a feeling at the time will hurt your future because you cannot deliver, but it's the right thing to do because you have to protect the company and you have to protect yourself. As soon as you go over that cliff, it will be a difficult time for you. So I think I hold there, because the most fun part of this is the Q&A. And is that okay? You have heard enough? Good, yeah.
Is this on? Yeah, this is on.
How do you know that I have my bike with me when I'm traveling?
I'm not going to tell you that.
Okay. Is her name is her name Stacy?
But just no. Oh, okay. Just remember, okay. We're watching you.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. And I don't know how long you can stay here, but I've got the 56 questions here for you. Okay.
Yeah.
And thank you, Inga. We appreciate your comments. Very interesting. Very enlightening. We've got some questions here on trade.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the questions is any thoughts you can share with us on the TPP, Trans-Pacific Partnership?
Mm-hmm.
Good idea, bad idea?
I think it's a fantastic idea. And I think we have made some movements in that area the last couple of years. But suddenly it looked like it stalled a little bit because people, I think due to election, were careful to take a position on it, because for some it may be moved like by that job will move out, specifically manufacturing will move out of United States, but it will not. So I think there's even data and facts that if you open up those type of opportunities, there will be more growth in the United States. So I am, and 3M, we are very, very supportive of TPP, and we are supporting it the whole way through.
Thank you. Yeah, there was a good article in the Wall Street Journal yesterday about open trade in the editorial section.
Yeah.
Here's another one on trade. Could you amplify or comment a little further on what we need to do to change our trade relations with China and Mexico, and in parenthetical here, in order to make America great again?
Well,
okay.
All right. Well, first of all, China is not part of that TPP agreement, right? So China needs to be worked separately. But I don't see there is anything specifically in terms of trade that needs to be done with China in between the countries. I see it's more like China is becoming more and more protective of their own local companies. And that is a concern. You should be able to, in China specifically, compete with the same rules, right? So, and I've seen that over years, that they type of suddenly give some benefits to what I would say local companies in China. And that's a concern because we wouldn't do that here, United States, to them, right? And, mm-hmm. and I don't think, so maybe some in Europe, I don't need to name the countries, will try to have some barriers. But I think I think that's my biggest concern with China, generally speaking, in addition to other things they do that I think we can help them with.
Okay.
They copy a lot.
Great Britain, what would be the global impact and impact to your business if Great Britain departs the EU?
Well, no, I cannot say what it means for us specifically, and I wouldn't comment on that. And I personally don't think it will happen. And I think it will be too costly. It will be working against the whole idea from the beginning, which was one currency, free trade, free movement of people and currency and services, which now is under challenge, right? It's under challenge in Europe due to immigration and so forth, coming very much more than immigration coming from Middle East Africa. But when you look upon it and you look upon the facts and the figures, there's no benefit even for UK to suddenly go out of the European Union in terms of the whole overall union. They already have their own currency, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they should type of hang in with the rest of the European Union. And they need the Germans, they need the French, they need to be part of that. And collectively they will be stronger than stand alone, right? There is nothing indicating that you will win long term by standing alone, as some people in UK would like to do. I think that's is to run your operation. If you put on your glasses, you have a microscope and you have a telescope. I think you only look in your microscope if you would like to exit now. They have to look at the telescope and see the bigger benefit as they go.
A couple of questions here, Inga, on tax policy. Mm-hmm. And I recall in the spring of 2009, when the Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson was asked, what did you say to the incoming president? What were they talking about? What was he talking about with respect to economic activity? And Hank said at that time, in April of 2009, that the president was saying that as soon as he got in office, he wanted to go after all those profits that U.S. corporations had trapped overseas, because those overseas countries were tax havens. Mm-hmm. And Treasury Secretary Paulson said, you know, you got to be careful because you might wind up 5-6 years from now where the U.S., every other country in the world will be a tax haven compared to the U.S. because our tax rate is so high, and you'll see companies leaving the U.S. to go domicile overseas.
Yeah.
So nothing much has changed since he had that conversation with the president. But
nothing.
Nothing. Would a lower U.S. corporate tax rate, which is currently 35%, spur more investment by 3M in the U.S.?
No, we don't make investment definition, but by definition, on the tax we are paying. You know, we have to invest based on the growth we would like to see in that country. So the answer to that is not necessarily, but could be, but not necessarily. So I wouldn't misrepresent that quote. But I would say, on the other hand, there is something wrong in the system where we have money overseas, quite some money overseas, that we then rather invest in those countries in order to build up capabilities there versus be able to do it in the United States. So it's 35% today, as you said, and I think that's one of the highest in the world. And that has shifted over time from a corporate perspective. I remember when I moved here, or Helene and I moved here in 1997, I mean, this was very attractive from this type of perspective, but over time it has shifted in terms of the tax policy. So the answer is, yeah, we could have invested more here, but we will find other ways to do it. I don't think that's what is holding us back. But the reality is, tax should go down, in my view, so we can reinvest money everywhere around the world, including United States, in order to create more jobs, right? So if you create more jobs, people will get a better life and a better standard of living, and they will reinvest themselves as you go, right? So I think it should change and should be lower, much lower. But I'm telling that everywhere I go around the world. Lower taxes, please. Would you not agree?
I think you got a lot of support for that one. Not that you're thinking about this for your company, but in general, what is your view on corporate inversions whereby U.S. companies move its domicile overseas?
Yeah. Well, I cannot talk for other companies. They have to comment on their view. But I would say again, and for us to do that, that needs to be a huge transaction for us. That needs to be 20. I made a calculation a couple of weeks ago. I think like 25 billion or so.
At least, yeah.
At least, yeah, 25. Yeah. Ed Liddy would not approve it. I know immediately. So he said, you take too much risk here, so you wouldn't do it.
Yeah, well, consider.
But by definition, you can say that it's coming back to, should be maybe lower tax and a little bit more friendly to be headquartered here versus moving over. And I think many icon companies in the United States have taken that route. They go to Ireland, go many, many places.
Okay. Question here is, how difficult was it for you to decide to sell the 3M Tartan Golf Facility?
It was not very difficult, to be honest. It was not very difficult. And the reason was the following. We are not about golf, right? We are not good golfers at 3M. To run a golf course, you should have real professionals doing that. And we now have real professionals doing it. We have Arnold Palmer and Annika Sørensen. They are taking it over in a new enterprise. It will be called the King and the Queen Course, and it will open summer 2017. So my view is, we focus on our core, what we should do. To own a golf course for a small group of 3Mers is not what this is all about, right? I would like to provide good return to you if you own shares in 3M, right?
Sure, yeah, you bet.
So that's what I would like to do.
I can prove it.
Okay, yeah, okay. So what we did, we got cash in, that's good for you. We reduced the loss every year, which is fantastic, and we have signed up with a legends of the world in golf, Annika Sørensen and Arnold Palmer. I think it's very good. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
Well, you can give me some guidance on how I should vote my proxy. I've got to come
up. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
thanks. This is a real granular question here, Inga. Mm-hmm. On the 15% free time for your R&D people, mm-hmm. they want to know, the person asking this question want to know, how do you allocate that time? Do you leave up to the individual if they want to take it all in 1 month? Or, you know, what are some of the details surrounding that policy you have?
Yeah, yeah. No, they cannot take it in 1 month. They cannot do that. So think about it in the following way. It's a different way also to think about it. So let's say we spend almost 6% of sales in research and development. That's around $2 billion per year. R is research, D is development. The research part is 15%. The D is 85%. So the D is where you go all those tough questions. When will you introduce it? Why are you behind timeline? Why don't you kill it, etc. On the research, that is where people spend their time in order to find, I would say, disruptive technologies that will change the world. And to those individuals in that group, you never ask, when will you kill it? Why are you behind, etc. To them, you ask, do you think you will get the Nobel Prize? Right? So
right.
I mean, they
that's
are like,
it. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, so that's what you do. They are, I would describe them as a little bit of prima donnas. And the only good thing is they are 3M's prima donnas. So,
yeah. Well, I want you to know they speak highly of you too, by the way. Yeah. Really, they haven't said a thing about
no,
you.
I don't
know the significance of this for your business, but what is the 3M's position on the outdoor billboard business in the future versus digital? Is that something that...
Digital is coming big time as a platform. If you think about that, that's really interesting. If you think about digital and IT, generally speaking, so think about this as facts and data. Today we have 2016, so 2015 and you're back to 2010. That's 5 years. The investment for 3M in IT, cybersecurity, etc., have almost doubled from 2010 to 2015. Almost doubled. If you take the percentage of that versus cybersecurity, 2010, the percentage of our IT spending versus cybersecurity was 2%. Today it's 7. So you got 2 to 7 on your budget in IT. And the real thing with that is it's all defensive, right? You think about it. You defend yourself, right? You defend. You have to make sure that you're protected. So you have gone from 2 to 7 percentage of your IT budget in 5 years in terms of make sure you're okay from a cyber perspective. And the budget have not really doubled, but almost doubled. So it's a big shift. Now there is an offensive and a defensive mechanism there, right? The offensive is about digital, and digital is expanding a lot. And I think the whole digital and the whole platforms in the world will change a lot. I met 2 weeks or 3 weeks ago, I met a CEO of a European company that is a very, very big brands. And he told me that they are losing business in China, so I talked specifically China, to companies that are local and that are using platforms. And those companies did not exist 5 years ago. Local brands use e-platforms and just taking market share. So that's a shift, I would say. It's a demographic shift as well, where you know, think about the past. Big global brands will be powerful, and you sell it through your shops, right? Now he's selling, said that he had lost 30% of his business, and this is a huge business. 30% of his business to local companies that did not exist 5 years ago by e-platform, digitalization. So it's big. So you need to be ahead of that, and that's why I'm saying the future is here already, because the platforms are here. So it's very easy to think about that as something that is in development, is coming later. So no, it's not. It's here already. So, sort of follow-up. The billboard will still be there, you know. But not so important.
Okay. The follow-up question or further elaboration on what the impact of all the migration into developed Western Europe, what's going to be the impact of that on business and on political stability? What do you see and how that's going to affect your business?
On the movements?
Yeah.
Well, I think by definition, you need to manage the inflow so you can get the people in and provide for them the right type of platforms of what they need in terms of housing and education and so forth. So you have to do that. Now, if you believe in diversity, and if you believe in that you get some more power through brains coming in, there should be a positive outcome of it. But I think it's a big challenge to integrate and make sure that you get all those people coming in, the platform for education. I have no facts and science relative to 3M, what it will mean, but by definition, more people there should be able to produce more business for us, generally speaking.
Going to be a little rough on the assimilation, though.
Yeah.
The students here are pretty alert to an opportunity, and they appreciated your comments about potentially, when they get finished with all that fine education they spoke about here, to pursue opportunities at 3M. And matter of fact, several of them have asked that if you, in 60 words or less, could tell them what they need to do when they get out there in the business world to succeed you in your position. Mm. So can you share it?
Yeah,
could you share that with us?
Yeah. Well, it takes some time. It takes some time.
Well.
No, I think, you know, the advice that I will have is in order to develop yourself as an individual in the business space, is to take on some tough challenges. And I think that's important. It's important to get into some businesses that is not a walk in the park, because that is where you really learn. And I think in most cases, the real learning is from the mistakes or the tough days, not the success and the good days. So I would say I will always encourage people to do that. And I've seen too many over the years that have been waiting for the best, so-called best position in a company. I would like to be over here. It's big, successful, very profitable. And by definition, most cases, I don't see them really moving and develop themselves. The individuals that take on a very tough business and go in and really sweating and waking up every morning and they don't know if the job is there by definition, is also the ones that have developed themselves in the best possible way. That's difficult to do, but it's an advice that I will give to anyone. Maybe, you know, advice also coming up from what you have done yourself, right? So, yeah. And I didn't pick them. They just sent me there. So they sent me crazy places the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know why.
Mm-hmm.
So they, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
They had a plan for you.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you have a home in Naples here, but you are relatively new to the area here, and we do have if you're here for a while, you'll appreciate this question, which is, hey, what about the Canadians? What's going on with Canada? Now, there's a big Canadian contingent here, so we got to make sure we address that, okay?
As a country?
They are doing,
Canada, first of all, I like Canada. I think the currency is under pressure.
You love Canadians, right?
They're okay. Depends what we're talking about. If we talk business or ice hockey. I don't know. But seriously, Canada relative to business is, in my view, have always done well. And I think at the current situation, they are a little bit under pressure due to the currency pressure and also the oil sand, right? They made big investment in oil sand. They believe, and many believe with them, that the oil price will go up, stay at 130 per barrel or something. Today it's like 40 per barrel. Yeah. And the way you work the oil sand is a very, very expensive process. So I think oil need to be 80 to 90 in order for oil sand to be viable from an economical perspective, and it's not. So I think that's the pressure for them. Very nice people, by the way, in Canada. Yeah.
You sound like you're running for political office. I think Bill Allen might have sent this question up. You know, he just like a dog with a bone here. He talked to you.
Littman stethoscope?
Something along that. He tried to camouflage it, but it's probably him. It says, what are your thoughts concerning 3M's medical future?
Well, I would broaden it out and say it's about healthcare. Healthcare is the fastest growing business for us. It's also the most profitable. So 3M's margin is almost 24% as a company. 24.
Good.
Yeah. Healthcare is 32.
Wow.
And growing the fastest. So the future is not already here. It's fantastic for healthcare.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. So there's no intention to sell off anything in that business.
Yeah.
Yeah. Think of adding. Yeah. We're adding.
Yeah. Ed Liddy never had those kinds of margins, did he?
Sorry?
Ed Liddy never had those kinds of margins, did he?
I don't. Ed has to talk for himself.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll hear from him 2 weeks from today. How is 3M dealing with the strong dollar, at least for now, strong dollar? But
we are hedging, right? So our current, we are hedging currency. We are hedging 50% of our exposure. And we hedge the biggest currencies. So we take the euro, the yen, etc. So that's what we do. So, and we have done that for quite some time. And we have a program that is, I would say, extended now for another couple of years. So that's how we do. The best thing, so that's one mechanism. The other mechanism that is equally, maybe more powerful, is that you invest in the country where you do the business. So when you produce a manufacturing product there, that is really where you're hedging, right? So if you produce in Europe, in the currency of euros, that is the hedging by definition. So the best thing, but that takes time for you to come there, right? You cannot suddenly move that because you started from one point where you may be exported over. The best thing is invest in the place so you produce there. That's the best hedging. You have your people there, you produce there, etc. You buy your raw material. But from a currency perspective, we are hedging 50% of our exposure. And I think we have got some good credits for that, actually.
So, good. Yeah. Good. The follow-up question here asks if you could elaborate a little bit more on your experience in Russia. You said that helped shape you as a leader, gave you the challenges and opportunities to show your leadership style. Can you comment a little more on what it was actually like living and working in Russia?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so first of all, this was 1995 to 1997. So that's the time period, so back then. And Russia was just on the way to go from, I would say, communistic regime and business environment to more Western style, etc. And I think the way I looked upon it was two things. I came in with a lot of skepticism, right? If you're born and raised in Sweden, you had Soviet Union very close to you. So by definition, that didn't feel like the best assignment you can get when they when they congratulate you and say, please, you're the new managing director in Russia. That's a scary day. And I was not really sure if I should do it, but some people convinced me this was maybe the best thing I could do for my future. So I went in, and I figured out in that first trip, Helene and I went in, I think we spent a week, I went back and said, hey, this is not too bad. I mean, they have two legs, they have two arms. I mean, there was good food. There was like, okay, so let's try. And I figured out when I was there two things. I could teach them in every business meeting I was in because it was so new for them that I could teach them. But they also teach me about life. It's the first time I suddenly recognized that I've read about communism, but I've only read about it. Suddenly, I saw the impact of those people that was there. And I would say at that time, people that was 40 plus was too late. They were so impacted by the communist system. So you need to be in the 20, 25, 30 something in order to really adapt and be able to do the right thing. So from that perspective, as for me, where I could teach and I can learn in every single meeting every day. I think that's fantastic if you can do that. Number two, it also teach me the importance of business conduct. You got a lot of proposals those days relative to how you could expand your business. And you could understand, this is a dangerous way to go. And I just followed the principle that I was taught and learned around what not to do. And I think that looking upon it later as a leader is a fundamental thing. No one even tried to come with something to me that is even potentially borderline. Because I've seen it, I've done it, I've been part of negotiations that I can write the book about. And I think that's where you learn. You learn it right there. That's what I'm saying. It's not to fly in with a dashboard and tell people, I think we should do this and that. You're there every day and live in a compound that is totally secured with dogs. And I mean, it's just, you learn a lot. So 2 years there was, felt more than two, I can say. Mm-hmm. But I will also appreciate 3M because when I moved in, the agreement was, Inge, you will not stay more than 3 years, but not less than two.
Yep.
And it was a handshake in between me and a person with the name Desimoni, that I was the CEO at the time.
Yeah.
On the day of 2 years, I went to St. Paul.
Yeah.
So we didn't need to sign any papers. I trusted 3M, and they tried to give me that opportunity, and I think I took it.
Well, great. Well, Inge, before we conclude here, as a token of our appreciation for you coming in here today and addressing us, I've got two wonderful coffee table books here on Naples and Marco Island that we'd like to present to you.
Okay.
And thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.